I'm a big fan of electronic music and all the variations of it. So when I'm working, I love like listening to some down-tempo house music.
Hey, everyone. I'm Paul Lemley, the head of partnerships at Verbal, and I want to welcome you to Verbal Voices, the podcast that dives deep with audio creators of all stripes, from traditional podcast hosts, audio storytellers, sound engineers, ASMR artists, spoken word poets, stand-up comics, and hell, even the brands that use podcasts to engage their audiences. I want to find out how they've mastered their craft, what challenges they've faced and overcome, what tools they use to grow their audiences, and of course, what they're excited about most within this fast-growing world of audio. Before we get to this week's guests, I just want to remind listeners that if you run a podcast, produce audio, run a network, or are a publisher using audio to engage your audience, we want to work with you. We're launching our platform very soon, and we want to get as many amazing creators as possible to claim their station, embed your audio on your site, use our amazing new snippet feature, more on that to come, and even earn ad revenue on your content. If you're interested in learning more, reach out to me directly at paul@verbal.com. That's paul@verbal.com. On this episode, I have an amazing conversation with Harry Duran, the host of Podcast Junkies. If you're not familiar with Podcast Junkies, consider Harry the OG host of a podcast about podcasting. Launched back in 2014 and over 225 episodes published to date, Harry has an incredible guest list like John Lee Dumas, Pat Flynn, Jordan Harbinger, and Helen Zaltman. Harry's also the founder of Fullcast.co, a full-service business podcast consultancy where he helps launch, produce, scale, and market podcasts for an array of clientele. He's also a frequent startup advisor, which makes this conversation an important one for us at Verbal. So let's jump right in with Harry. How's it going, Harry? How are you?
I'm doing great today, Paul. Thanks for the invite.
We're happy to have you and looking forward to multiple conversations in the future. But for the listeners at home, why don't you give us like a 2-minute background, who you are as, you know, with Podcast Junkies and Fullcast and everything.
So Podcast Junkies was started in 2014. It actually came out of a desire to learn more about podcasting because I went to a conference called New Media Expo, and this is dating it, but it was a conference for podcasters, YouTubers, and bloggers. And I was there because I'd actually started a mobile app called Know Your DJ. I'm a fan of electronic music, and I grew up DJing vinyl and turntables. And I thought I was going to start a podcast to interview DJs, then quickly pivoted when I realized how hard it was going to be to track them all down. But it was interesting that I saw the likes of Pat Flynn and Amy Porterfield talk, Cliff Ravenscraft talking about podcasting. And I had a flash moment. I remember this show called Inside the Actor Studio. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was just a nice little sneak peek behind the lives of personalizing, you know, actors. And I thought, what about that for podcasting? And so I started Podcast Junkies. And it's a bit meta. It's a podcast where I interview other podcasters. And it's since grown. It's, as of this week, 225 episodes. And they're all typically hour-long conversations. And I started with video from day one because I realized the importance of building a relationship with my guest as opposed to just having the audio.
Right.
And it's proved invaluable. There's something about having that face-to-face conversation with people. And then I've since gone on to speak at podcasting conferences like Podcast Movement, PodFest, We Are Podcast in Australia, and just started to develop a relationship with people in the podcasting space. A year into that, I there was a lot I didn't know about online businesses and digital marketing. It was all new to me coming from almost 20 years of being in corporate. I had previously been at JPMorgan Chase and E-Trade in their marketing department, and I've done some stints as a business consultant for business intelligence systems. And I wanted to start my own company in the podcasting space. So I started Fullcast, which is an abbreviation for Full Service Done For You Podcasting. And we've been working with brands and business owners since 2015, and we handle all aspects of the launch, the production, and the marketing of shows.
You mentioned you're a fan of electronic music and Know Your DJ was an early startup you launched early on. What is it about audio that attracts you to it as a format, as a business, as a brand for Podcast Junkies? What was it?
I think early on, what I realized is my first foray into podcasting, it was the research I was doing into mobile apps. Because at the time, I was developing a mobile app with a friend and just learning and just trying to consume as much information as possible. And also realizing the beauty of being able to consume it on the go. And I remember being in New York and going on walks with my dog and just voraciously trying to track down anything that was where I could just learn more. And I had been a fan of audiobooks and I'd been listening to a couple of audiobooks at the time. So I was familiar with the ability to just consume content on the go. And I also learned early on the benefits of listening at a higher speed. So like I've been able to consume much more content that way and it's just been more convenient. So it's always been a medium. Audio has been a medium for me that I've been super passionate about for a long time.
And I think on your bio on your website, you've been a DJ for 20 years now.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up, I remember watching early on, we'd go to parties in high school. I actually DJed my high school dance.
Nice.
but I, it was, yeah, I mean, I learned and I was always fascinated with this concept of the DJ as the one being the controller of like the energy of a party.
Right.
And so, and I was fascinated that you could get two vinyl records played side by side to beat match and just seamlessly, you know, play music, you know, for hours and keep the crowd moving without there seeming to be like an interruption in the music or in the flow. And it was it always fascinated me. So I would always just like watch my friends, and I got to one of my good friends at the time was an inspiration, as well as my cousin who I would go over to his house. He was a little bit older than me, and so that combo really just kicked it off for me. And then, you know, you always remember the day you buy your turntables as a DJ, and they're still in storage. So
and as a podcaster, you remember maybe buying your first mic and, and soundboard and stuff.
Exactly, the first tweet on my Podcast Junkies Instagram post is a photo of the Heil PL2T boom mic, a boom arm that I bought because I was so excited. That was day one of my podcasting journey.
I don't know what it is about microphones. Every forum I'm part of is, you know, at least twice or three times a week, someone's asking, you know, what's your favorite mic? It's crazy.
Yeah, and they tend to overthink that too. And I think as I've been in the hosting seat for a while and naturally just conversations with other podcasters. And that's the beauty of interviewing other podcasters. They always have really good microphones. So you never have to worry about the quality for these. And then as we've done the training is a lot of times people overthink the tech. And right now I'm on the Samson Q2U, which is really my go-to recommendation now. It's $60. It's easily found on Amazon and it's just a great sounding mic. So I like to get people past the technical hurdle as quickly as possible so they can just get started on recording.
That's a great tip. And let's pivot there to Fullcast. What are those challenges that you face with early podcasters when you're onboarding them and launching their shows and coaching them to scale their show and become better interviewers? What are those challenges besides getting over that hurdle of the tech?
I think what was interesting for me is as I was moving out of the corporate world and learning about best practices for how to build an online business and how to provide coaching and provide services for the audience I was aiming to serve, this concept of allowing people to focus on their genius. And it's something one of my coaches told me early on. And I feel the way he described it to me early on was a great example. He said there's four types of tasks. Those you're incompetent at, those you're competent at, those you're excellent at, and you're genius. And obviously those first two, you get them off your plate as soon as possible because there's stuff that you have no business doing and you're not really good at. You know, common examples are like if you have a home and you have someone coming over to clean the home and do housekeeping, you know, that's not the best use of your time. The excellent tasks are sometimes where creators struggle because they're things that they've learned, they've dabbled in, they have a little bit of skill in. For me, for example, it's website design. I know a little bit of HTML and CSS, enough to get me in trouble.
Right.
Now, I remember working on something in my website that was taking me hours to figure out something in the sidebar. And I just broke down. I just called a web developer friend. I said, can you take a look at this and fix this? And he fixed it in like 15 minutes it took him less than that. It was just so crazy how quickly he went in and just fixed it. And I was like, whoa, that light bulb went off. I'm like, that's your genius. it's the one, it's a thing that you're like, you know, that's what he's amazing at, and right. It's where he should be spending the majority of his time. And so I think about that now as we start to work with businesses and business owners. Early on, they would ask me, how do I create graphics or how do I edit my audio? And I'm like, I don't think that's the right question. That's right. Not your genius. Your genius as a business owner, as a business, is how do I create compelling content? Like, how do I create a kick-ass solo episode, or how do I create this amazing, engaging conversation with, you know, someone that's going to be a guest on the show? And then let us take care of all the rest. Like, let us take care of like the editing and the mastering and the leveling and mixing your intros and your outros and your music. Let us take care of posting it to your website. Let us take care of creating graphics and connecting on all your social accounts and posting it. Let us take care of writing the show notes and doing the transcriptions. And you could almost see, I would have these conversations over Zoom, and it was like a weight's been lifted off their shoulders, because they're like, wait, you do all that? Like, I don't have to do that. And I realized, so that we've been just doubling down on that and just trying to figure out how much can we take off the plate of our clients so that we become a partner for them, and also just let them focus their energy on building their business, because they're business owners to begin with. So they already have enough on their plate. Right. But when it comes to the podcasting piece, just focus on like how to just be a great host or keep creating that great audio content.
What you rattled off there, that list of the to-do list that early podcasters have no clue exists. Like they're thinking, okay, yeah. I need a mic, I need some interview guests, and I need somewhere to host it, and that's it. But when it comes to editing and transcribing and marketing and scaling and doing sponsorships, once you get to that level, there's just a black hole of what you need to learn and teach yourself. But I like the idea of following your genius, choosing your genius, getting out of your own way, essentially. And that's awesome that Fullcast kind of, you know, does that bespoke for each clientele. So now you open Pandora's box. What's your genius then? What do you primarily focus on? Let's keep it at podcast junkies. What do you focus on primarily to make sure your content is killer and passing off the rest to whoever is on your team?
I think what's been fascinating for me in the journey of being a podcast host is I try to focus my attention on the guest as much as possible. And it's really a skill, and it's something that I'm trying to improve on a daily basis. And I've always been a fan of people who do this well. And, you know, you can rattle off names like Larry King and Charlie Rose and Terry Gross and Barbara Walters, probably dating myself with that one. But my parents would always watch like 60 Minutes and so Mike Wallace and, you know, just 2020. And I remember like sitting in my parents' living room and I'm thinking back now, even as you asked the question of like, wow, you can always tell when someone has done their homework and gets the best out of their guests. And now in current day, I listen to Alec Baldwin has a great show called Here's the Thing. Jordan Harbinger is a friend and I'm a big admirer of his show. So there's always been, Tim Ferriss does a great job in terms of researching his guests. And it's just interesting for me, just that skill of interviewing. It's this idea of being laser focused, being super curious, following the threads as they present themselves, because too often early podcasters make the mistake of having their list of questions. And then when they've asked them and they run out of questions, it's sort of like dead air. Like, I don't know what to ask next.
Right.
If you just have a natural curiosity and, you know, like you did, like pulling that thread of like asking me more about the DJ aspect of it, it's just natural. And the people who listen to the podcast, they have that same curiosity. So we've all been listening, you know, on that that point when we're listening to a podcast and we're like, oh, ask them that follow-up question, like,
right.
You know, because I just want to learn more about that. So I always try to be an active listener. One of the other tips is to be comfortable with silence. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the benefits of having the video as a medium for having the conversation, even if you don't end up using it, because a lot of times you can ask a challenging question or you can ask a provocative question and you can see your guest just kind of like think, you know, sit back and their eyes go up and a little bit and they're actively thinking about how best to answer that question.
Right.
If it was just audio, you'd be like, hey, Paul, you still there? Like, but you know, you can always, and that's the magic of podcasting. You can always edit out in post-production. So
right.
The longer you take, I've found it seems to be correlated with the better the quality of the answer. So
absolutely.
You got to just bite your tongue, ask those challenging questions and just sit back and let your guests take the appropriate amount of time, and you'll really get a good answer.
Yeah, I had to train myself the first three or four episodes when I'm interviewing someone. I tended to say something while they're talking in agreement, yeah. Like, oh, that's great. Yes, cool, awesome. And it ruins the moment, that 15-second, 30-second clip that is just perfect from the guest. I just got to ask the question, shut up. And then once the interviewee is finished answering the question, then roll into it or, you know, follow up. But yeah, shut up. That's the lesson I had learned.
What's great is that even if you listen to it, Mark Maron's also a great interviewer as well. And he talks about his interview with Barack Obama. He said, you know, as soon as it was done, like, he was like, oh my God, I was like, I forgot to ask him like these two or three things. Or I think there's this one town that they both lived in or something. So you're always going to have a list of questions at the end that you didn't get to. And I think that's just the nature of podcasting. There's no way that you can possibly ask every guest every single possible question,
right?
So you do the best you can, and you just try to make the most out of that conversation, and you know, hopefully you'll get another opportunity down the line. But
right.
I think it's just a matter of being present in the moment and just paying attention to what they're giving you, and just having that back and forth.
Absolutely. The other interviewer that I love, I don't know if you're a fan of on YouTube, but Hot Ones. I forget the name of the host, but they do 10 questions over 10 hot wings. It's very structured. And the amount of research they do on each guest is incredible. And he actually gets complimented, and the team gets complimented a lot on it. So definitely highly recommend that one.
I've heard that one too.
I want to just follow the thread about DJing one more time. What did you learn over the span of DJing that translates to an effective podcast host? I mean, it's two separate formats, two separate kind of what you're focusing on and what you're trying to get the audience to do. What did you learn over that span of time?
I think what was always fascinating for me, and what I just grew to have an appreciation for, because I not only DJed and would go to parties, but started attending music festivals and like would go for like two or three days straight to get, and just festivals of just DJs. Detroit Electronic Music Festival, otherwise known as Movement, is a really popular one that I've been to several times. And it was just, you can always have an appreciation for the DJs that understand nuances of like taking people through a journey. Like if you're going to be doing a 1 hour set or, you know, 3 hour sets, and there's DJs that have done like 9 hour sets, and there's something about that, to have an understanding of like the ability to let people breathe, the ability to take people, like bring them on a high, but then have a corresponding low to let them recover. And, you know, I think about that sometimes in the context of a conversation, in terms of like the tone and the subject matter that's being covered. And that's why I really like my conversations to go about an hour, because I really feel, you know, those first 15-20 minutes, it's more of like a getting to know you opportunity and a chance to have a little bit of small talk. And most of the times people that I've had on my show are people that I've connected with at a previous podcast conference. So I have a bit of a relationship with them. So I feel like it's just a continuation of the conversation like we had at the bar or in the lobby or in the hallway. But I am conscious of it, and I'm always making sure I'm respectful of the listener's time as well, because some of the early ones ran long, and I think I, you know, in the beginning I was like, oh, I don't mind, I'm going to be like the Joe Rogan and just let them meander. But right. I think lately I've been thinking about, I've explained to my audience, or my audience now knows, that it's about an hour format, so they understand, okay, it's a Podcast Junkies episode. I know how much time I need to set aside. So just thinking about the sort of like the journey in the same way a DJ does, like the journey you want to take a listener through with as a result of the podcast episode. And then later on, if I do want to start another format, like a behind the scenes, I could be like, okay, we're going to, for paying customers or something, like we're going to go an extra hour with the guest. And if you want to listen, you know, I've seen some podcast hosts do that as well.
That's interesting, because we're going to do a rapid fire questions at the end and edit them into a sort of audio bio, which we're dabbling with here at Verbal. So I'm excited to test that format and see what that story arc might be with our guests. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Let's pivot to Fullcast and your work with your clientele. I want to know what has surprised you about working with businesses that want to launch their podcasts, experts in their industry that are looking to grow their own brand awareness and interest in that specific niche. What really has surprised you about working with those types of podcasters?
I think what's interesting is the clients who've had the most success are the ones who really think about and plan what their episodes are going to be. And we've been conscious of that. When we first started, we would just say, okay, like, what content you have, get it to us as soon as you can and give us enough lead time. And we were just churning it out as they would come up with the episodes. But what we've been really more conscious of is helping them do that planning for them. So one of the things we do from an onboarding perspective is actually we set up an Airtable form for them. And it says, look, plan out your next 3 months worth of content. And it could be just like one word or the name of a guest or someone you'd like to think about having on the show. And what this does, it helps you think about how to organize your episodes. And sometimes that could lead itself to maybe putting together a series, a multi-part series. So if you're going to do, you know, a whole episode on, you know, podcasts that speak to racial diversity, you're going to say, we're going to do a three-part series on racial diversity and with these three hosts. And then you would think about it. The reason I like that and the reason why the planning is important is this idea of open loops and callbacks. And so if you're familiar with serialized TV, it's going to say previously on Game of Thrones, and they give you that little recap. And we coach our clients to do that. We always have them what I call roll out the welcome mat for every single guest. Assume that the person listening to the show, there's always going to be someone who's listening for the first time. Mm-hmm. So, hey, if you're new to the episode, my name is Harry Duran. I'm the host of Podcast Junkies, and these are interviews with some of the most fascinating podcasts and podcast hosts and podcast personalities I've met in my journey. And so it's really short, but it's always just kind of like rolling out that, saying that welcome, saying that hello, because sometimes people are like, oh, go listen to this episode, and they send you like into episode 150 of this random podcast, and it's the first time you're listening. So it's your first introduction to that podcast and that host. So it's important to do that. And then the idea of a callback is to say, hey, in case you missed last episode, I had a great conversation with Elon Musk, and we talked about, you know, what he's planning with SpaceX. And so it gives you the opportunity to promo a past episode. And so you're always looking for spaces in your show to talk about other episodes. And then at the end, the open loop is stay tuned next week, you know, and I have a, you know, fantastic conversation with Oprah Winfrey about, you know, how she comes up with the idea of giving away cars or something like that. Just, you know, just something that teases people, because you'll never know when you mention a topic or you mention a guest that they'll be like, oh yeah, I'd love to learn more about that. And I think what podcasts, hosts and for, you know, for businesses to think about is there's so many things competing for people's attention nowadays. It's so crazy. And just because you promote it once on Twitter and once on your LinkedIn page, like it's not enough right nowadays. And so that's why we really just go with a multi-platform approach. And even though, you know, some of our clients are not super active on some of these platforms, we promote it on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Medium, YouTube, the newsletter, like everywhere we can to get the word out, because a regular podcaster will naturally see the episode pop up in their subscriptions. But, you know, I've seen some of my favorite shows that I subscribe to, they, you know, they're on my Overcast app, but I just miss them because there's so much competing noise nowadays.
Right.
So I think it's, and hopefully that answers the question, but just kind of this idea of thinking about the planning aspect and thinking about the promotion aspect to cover as many bases as possible.
It makes perfect sense. It actually mirrors what you do with the story arc of your podcast episodes and as well as your DJ sets. I love that mirror of editorializing both at a micro level of an episode, but at a macro level of a series or my entire breadth of podcast episodes over 4 years, if you're podcasting that long. What does the trajectory look like for someone that's new, but also someone that's been with me since day one? I love thinking that stuff through. Very cool.
Yeah, and it's important to think about your content as evergreen and also make your content easy to find. I know there's people in both camps in terms of like, do I number my podcast? Do I not? I like the idea of numbering just because it gives you an easy reference point as the listener to say, oh, you should go listen to episode 22. That's the first time I had, for example, Jordan on the conversation on my show or something like that. And little things like that, I know, and I can always tell when a podcaster has that information handy or well prepared, because they quickly reference it, or they just right. do a good job in post-production and they quickly reference those episodes. So, you know, it's best practice. I don't actually always do it when I'm on I'm having conversations with my guests, but I'm always conscious of it if I feel I'm going to be mentioning a past guest, or I do it in my intros or outros. You know, I had right. a great conversation with Paul, and if you missed it, go back and listen to these episodes. One of my clients, her name is Carrie Granger of the Granger Network. She's got a podcast called Leadership Impact. And she calls her podcast episodes prescriptions. She's an executive coach. She works with C-level executives, mainly CEOs. And each season has been a theme. This season, season three, was on honesty. Last season was about accountability. But as she's coaching clients and talking to prospects, you know, if she covers specific themes in the course of those conversations, she'll say, "Hey, Paul, why don't you go back and listen to episode 2 and episode 7? Because I think those specifically address the topics we're talking about, and they might help you with the problem you're working on." And then schedule a follow-up call with us, and then we'll take it from there. So if you think about how strategic that is, and how, you know, it makes you think about your content and how to be more deliberate with the content that you're creating, and the fact that you want it to be evergreen, it does the heavy lifting for you as a business owner, because you know, you don't have to be on 5 phone calls with a prospect. You can send them to 4 episodes and have the 1 phone call. And it's pretty powerful.
God, that's so cool. Making them as prescriptions. That's a really cool way to think about it. And it brings up this idea that we believe at Verbal that discovery is broken in the podcasting industry. It's very difficult to find new things that I might be interested in. Some apps do it well, but all in all, I'm getting recommendations from people I know, like, and trust. But that discovery option of, you know, I want to send a playlist to someone. And that's something we're working on at Verbal. What other things do you think are broken within the industry or missing altogether, that creators just have had to reinvent how they structure their shows just to get more awareness and more discovery out of it, like the prescription idea?
Yeah, I think it is a discovery. I think it's the ability to engage with your listeners. I know, you know, there's a podcast app called Good Pods, which was created by a friend of mine, JJ Ramberg, and they've gotten a decent amount of investing, and they're trying to make that happen. And they have actually, like, verified profiles similar to Twitter with the blue check mark. They're doing that. So they've had people, I know they've got Gwyneth Paltrow on there and a couple of other bigger names coming on and actually recommending podcasts. So again, I think every little bit help. I don't think there's going to be one silver bullet answer for engagement. I mean, as a podcast host myself, I really get excited when I can put a face to a name in terms of, or even a face to a listener, because whether I'm going to a podcast conference, I typically wear a bright yellow shirt for my show. It's called Podcast Junkies, and I specifically went with high contrast colors. So it's bright yellow with black lettering. And one of my marketing tips in the beginning was to actually print out 50 shirts as an investment, and I would hand them out for free. And so people would stop me. But every time someone would stop me, I'd say, like, "Oh, where did you, I listened to your show." And I'm like, "Oh," it would be like, "Okay, where did you find it? Like, where do you listen to it? Like, how long have you been listening?" And so we're always looking as podcast hosts for that information to learn more. So I know Breaker highlights people who've been following your podcast or have commented on it. So it's a bit scattered, because it's like you have to almost check out what's happening on all these different apps. Right. But I think giving your listeners different opportunities for you to connect with you, reminding them there's always good old-fashioned email if they want to reach out. Sure. But just this idea of understanding who our audience is, you know, any tools that allow that to happen would be helpful for us to just build a deeper relationship with our audience, so that we can begin to ask them questions about, you know, what content resonates with you, what did you like, what did you not like, what can we be doing more of as a podcast host.
And I think that's really missing early on in a podcaster's journey is, you know, your first 10 listeners, you got to grind for those. You got to grind for your first 1,000 listeners. And it's essentially hand-to-hand combat. It's like a startup getting the first 10 customers. You got to do the door knocking. You got to wring their arm and pull them along into your funnel. And those are your first evangelists, essentially. So you're right. The engagement tools are definitely broken. So there's 2, discovery and engagement. What else is missing in the industry that you feel would 10x the capabilities of early or even seasoned podcasts?
Yeah, I think there's always people trying to figure out ways to monetize the platform. And I know there's some really good options out there. You know, Patreon has been around since I started podcasting, but now platforms like Glow.fm and the other one is called Supercast, which allows you to create immediate opportunities for you to monetize your audience. Glow makes it super easy because you can actually decide you want to subscribe to the private feed and do it all within the app, and it's app agnostic. So I could be in Overcast or I could be in Player.fm. It creates a payment link, because most podcast apps now have the browser built in as well. So you can browse to the payment page, make the payment. It'll add that feed to your private feed to your podcast apps, and immediately you can consume that content. So I've interviewed Amira Valiani on the show, and so they're doing really interesting things as well. So I think all those little things help, because obviously as a podcast host, who's thankfully I've had the ability to turn it into a business with Fullcast, but there's people who are podcasting and that is their business. And so they're always trying to develop relationships with sponsors. So anything that makes that ecosystem easier for podcasters to monetize is always welcome.
What do you feel sponsors get wrong about the audio format? If you could talk to all businesses that want to do read ads or pre-roll, post-roll ads, sponsoring show notes, that type of thing, what do they get wrong about audio as a format or working with audio creators?
Yeah, I think it's just really understanding the medium and then realizing that it's different from radio, different than a billboard, you know, it's different than print. It's really long tail. And, you know, I think this is the maxim in sales that people need to hear a brand mentioned. I don't know if it's now 7 times, I think now it's up to 12 or something like that before they'll take action on it. And it's the same thing with podcasting, because to your point, you know, when people listen to the show, they start to know who you are and they start to trust you. And so, you know, you mentioned the know, like, and trust, which a friend of mine, Katie Kremitzos, upgraded to know, love, and trust, which I really like a lot. And they really want to engage with you and know that you're a trusted voice for these recommendations. So as a sponsor, you know, you need to be able to commit to, you know, a 3-month buy, a 6-month buy, to know that it takes time. Because if I'm mentioning something week over week, then, you know, my listeners will you know, put 2 and 2 together and say, well, Harry's really committed to this brand. He continues to mention it. You can tell that he's passionate about it, because obviously it's going to be host read, which is the best way. And that, I think, it's really good for building those relationships. You know, anytime you can build a relationship with a sponsor as a host, a lot of times there's a disconnect because they're just going after, you know, big shows. And so, you know, the more niche your show is, the more there's opportunities for you to find products that would be a specific fit for your show. So you got, you know, the onus is on the host as well to just make sure that they're going out there and discovering and bringing new sponsors into the ecosystem, because there may be people that would be a good fit for a podcast that have never advertised on a podcast because they're not as familiar with it, but they are spending marketing dollars, right, on trade shows, on print ads, on radio. And so I think it's just a matter of, you know, an idea of like more awareness, more education, I think, needs to happen, especially for not people that are already, you know, sponsoring shows, but maybe people that have marketing dollars but have not discovered podcasting yet.
Just got to keep chipping away at the pie.
Yeah.
One last question before we get to the rapid fire questions. What are you hoping to accomplish at a 40,000 foot level within the industry? Obviously, you're already doing this as a living, Fullcast and Podcast Junkies, self-supporting. But what's your hope for the industry? What's your hope to be a catalyst for? What's that 40,000 foot look like for you personally?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've talked about, and I've spoken about this and mentioned it when I speak on stage, is I have a mission of helping 1 million people find their voice. And a lot of times, you know, we think about, well, that's going to take a lot of work to reach all those 1 million people. But the beauty of having not only a podcast that hopefully inspires people to get started with their show, because they hear other people who've had success, but also through the business, once I help creators and business owners start their show, then it becomes really like an exponential amplifier effect. Because while I may not be able to touch 1 million people and help them find their voice through podcasting, which is, you know, my preferred platform for helping them get the word out, you know, each one of those shows, because that could have their 1,000 or their 10,000 audience, and I think by way of that exponentially, I'm going to meet that goal and let as many people like have a story to tell. I mean, I'm a firm believer that everyone has a story that needs to be heard by your intended audience, wherever it is. And it really has become a passion for me. And I feel it's the underlying reason that drives a lot of what we do as a business and what I do personally as a podcaster.
Very cool. Playing the long game, but still very specific. I love it. Yeah. So this is going to be your Inside the Actor Studio moment. I'm James Lipton and you're the actor. So let's roll right into the rapid fire questions, if that's cool.
Perfect. Ready.
All right. What's your favorite type of audio besides podcasts?
I think I alluded to it earlier, I'm a big fan of electronic music and all the variations of it. So when I'm working, I love like listening to some down-tempo house music. And then parallel to that, also just listening to some just instrumental meditative music with no vocals helps me focus during the day.
What's your favorite audio clip of all time?
If I had to think of a specific clip of audio that'll immediately like lift the mood, it would be Happy by Pharrell Williams.
Okay. What's your favorite sound?
I've found that I tend to gravitate towards sounds that relax me. I'm a huge fan of like streams, gurgling streams, Zen fountains, like that specific sound really relaxes me.
What's your least favorite sound?
It might be related to all the construction that's happening across the street from us right now, but I would say jackhammers.
What do you listen to in the car?
I don't drive as much now anymore. We only have one car in our house right now, which is my partner's car. But when I do drive, again, I think I love, just gravitate towards house music. So like any good deep house music. And if it's especially helpful if it's a nice summer day with the windows down.
If you could secretly record anything, what would it be?
I'm a big fan of Nikola Tesla, so if there was a way to record his dream journal, that'd be top of the list.
Electric power is everywhere present in unlimited quantities. I can drive the world's machinery without the need of coal, oil, gas, or any other fuel.
What would be your walk-up song?
Again, big fan of music that lifts the mood, and I've always been a fan of Lovely Day by Bill Withers.
Love him. Cool. To close it out, what do you have going on? Where can we find you? Plug some links.
Yeah, so I'm really active on LinkedIn. I spend about a good hour on there daily. So Harry Duran on LinkedIn, and you'll see the last name has been modified. So it says Harry Duran Podcast Strategist. For the podcast Junkies, active on all the social platforms, so Twitter and Instagram, Podcast Junkies. And for the company Fullcast, if there's anyone interested in learning how to get their show started, we have a one-page handout we call the Ultimate Podcast Launch Game Plan. So what I'll do for your audience, Paul, will create a special link. So if the listeners go to fullcast.co/verbal, V-U-R-B-L, it'll be a link, a place for them to download that PDF to help them get started with a podcast.
That's great. And we'll link to it in the show notes as well. Thank you, Harry. I really appreciate your time. This has been a lot of fun. I can't wait to show you what we're building at Verbal very soon. Can't wait to meet you in person too.
Likewise, Paul. Thanks for the opportunity to share my story with your audience. Always fun to talk to new podcasters.
Hey everyone, I want to thank you for listening to Verbal Voices. The audio bio section was a experiment we're making. We've done a few for our next episodes coming up. Please tweet at me at P-A-L-E-M-L-E-Y, that's P-A-Lemley, or Get Verbal, and let us know what you like about the audio bios, or if you hate them, let us know that too. We might test putting them in the intro rather than at the very end, but we're looking to shake things up a bit with the format, and so we'd love to get your feedback if you are willing to do so. If you're struggling to discover new audio content, go to our website, verbal.com, that's V-U-R-B-L.com, to read hundreds of podcast reviews. If you're an audio creator with stories to tell or advice to give, reach out to me directly at paul@verbal.com or tweet at us at getverbal. We'll see you later.